Welcome to everybody to a very special online event, 5 Essential Ayurvedic Remedies for Healing and Living Disease-Free. I'm David Crowe, the host of the Plant Medicine Summit and on the faculty at the Shift Network, and I'm very honored and pleased to introduce the teacher of this event. Kartapurik Khalsa has such an extensive bio that rather than read it first and then bring him on, I'm just going to bring him on first and talk to him about his bio, because I think you'll find it very interesting. So, KP, welcome.
Hi, David. Always a pleasure to work with you under any circumstances. Glad to be with you again today.
Excellent. So one of the first things that I think is really interesting about your bio is something that I can relate to personally, and that is that you have done a lot of your education in Ayurvedic medicine in a very unconventional way. Unconventional for the West, that is, but very traditional for the Ayurvedic system, which is that you have spent over 30 years studying Ayurveda with a master, with your teacher specifically, Yogi Bhajan. So I'm curious personally, and I think our audience would be very interested to find out, what was this type of education like? What's it like to actually study with an Ayurvedic guru for 32 years?
Well, nothing like I ever expected when we started, that's for sure. This was way back in the hippie days in the very early 70s, and I met him in a yoga class, and we just connected immediately, and I walked up to ask him a question or just say hi or whatever it was, and he almost immediately asked me if I'd be interested in studying Ayurveda, herbalism, and the medicinal side of yoga with him, and having no idea what that meant or what kind of a relationship I was committing to, I agreed to that, and 32 years later, was still continuing. So he had an entire plan worked out, although in the typical Asian way, he didn't tell me what that plan was or what it was going to be, and it was a long, slow glide path. So it was with him very involved in my interactions with clients and my projects, and he would teach me something, and then we'd use it, and then he'd teach me something else, and I'd come to him with questions, and there were a lot of projects along the way. Go find this herb, experiment with it, use it. Now remember, this was a long time ago, and we had no access to any texts in English, no products. It was very, very minimal in our experience, and I would learn about herbs verbally from him that I would take notes on, but never see sometimes for the next 20 years. So very intimate kind of situation, much slower. I did a lot of service around his situation, picking up people at the airport, going to the grocery store and buying bottles of water and, you know, all the usual kinds of things. And we would meet in different cities around North America over the years. He traveled extensively. And so he would say, look, I'm going to be in some city. Why don't you come join me and we'll have a session. And we cobbled it together that way over many, many years.
Interesting. Thank you. Well, that's a good background story about the classical education. Now, just to go ahead and touch on some of these other points, one of the things that I know is very interesting about you as an herbalist is that you have this classical background, and at the same time, you are very much functioning in the world of modern scientific research and the latest discoveries that are coming out about herbs and so forth. And so along these lines, I just want to mention to everybody that in your bio, some of the other points that are included is that you are president emeritus of the American Herbalist Guild, which is a very substantial accreditation, and that you have been credentialed to teach herbalism, yoga, and Ayurvedic massage nationally, and that you are also a professor at Massachusetts College of Pharmacy, a founding faculty in the Ayurvedic Sciences program at Bastyr University, and a faculty member in the Botanical Medicine Department at the National College of Natural Medicine, where you train naturopathic medical students and teach Ayurveda. So for our audience, I just wanted to give a little bit of a broader vision that you have this classical training in Ayurveda with a teacher that went on for decades, and you also are very professionally involved in the modern science of Ayurveda. Another very important thing here for the audience, KP has written or edited 30 books, including major works on Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, and physiology. And his latest book, The Way of Ayurvedic Herbs, was also co-authored with Michael Tierra, which brings to life Ayurveda in an understandable and practical kind of way. So KP was also the senior research scientist and chief medical formulator for 30 years at the Yogi Tea Company, which is an Ayurvedic medicinal tea company. That is something very interesting to think about in the presentation coming ahead. And he's created over 400 of his own formulas and works closely with companies that supply high-quality herbal products to health professionals. So as you can see from the bio, KP has an extensive history and background of working in many areas, both classical and scientific and educational. So there's one last point here that I want to discuss with you, KP, and this is something that I find very interesting as a story. When I talk to a lot of teachers and educators and practitioners of natural medicine, often I find that there's a health challenge in their personal history that was the catalyst for them to go into the study of herbal medicine and that led to them healing themselves. And that healing of themselves, that self-healing process, became the catalyst for them to go very deeply and to become an expert in this particular form of medicine that they have used to get well. I can say that I've experienced that to some degree for myself also, because I've had a number of health challenges, ironically, from studying Ayurveda in India and Nepal. But I have used these forms of medicine myself in depth and can say without a doubt that they are powerful agents of healing. And I think that gives a person a lot of credibility when they have that story. So would you be comfortable telling us about that health challenge in your life and what you learned from it?
Well, sure, of course. And, you know, my experience about my relationship with this whole situation continues to peel like an onion. And even I've been doing this for 47 years now. And even now I have realizations about my relationship to my own healing and how that happened and what the motivation was. And it's a very deep kind of situation. When I was 10 years old, I began to have pain in my spine, in my back. And I went to medical doctor and ended up going to teams of medical doctors, various orthopedists, and the diagnosis was never absolutely confirmed, although many diagnoses were considered, but they were universal in saying that I'd be lucky to make it to 40 because my spine would degenerate to the place where I wouldn't be able to survive after that point. My mother was a MASH nurse in Korea and came back and got pregnant immediately. My parents met in Korea in the military, and she was in no shape nutritionally or any other way to be pregnant, but there we were. So I started off behind where I should have been to begin with, and that probably had a lot to do with it. But these teams of orthopedists just said, don't get addicted to morphine too early because you're going to have to use a lot later. And sure enough, over the next several years, my spinal pain continued to get worse and worse until by mid-high school, I was in pain every waking moment. But I figured I could either enjoy my life in pain or I could not enjoy my life in pain. So I just did the other things that I wanted to do, hiking, camping, skiing, all the things that I did. And it just hurt all the time. The first time I got any relief at all was in a yoga class. And we did a yoga exercise that left me pain-free for about 15 minutes. And I said to myself, there's something that can do that. There might be other things that can do that. This was before I even met Yogi Bhajan, although it was the yoga of his style that I was teaching. So then when he came to town to teach, I took advantage of that. I never thought of my interest in yoga as being an avenue for healing my my health problems. I was just, it was the hippie times. People were interested in Eastern philosophy. I wanted to check it out. I really enjoyed it. I was introduced to meditation. I loved that. Now, looking back, you know, almost five decades later, I realized that clearly it was a wounded healer syndrome, the kind of thing that you were mentioning that is so common. And I was drawn subconsciously to that, I'm sure. But it was never part of the intention. But as those things began to weave together, my spinal problem began to resolve, and over the next few years, it completely reversed, and now there's no evidence of it on x-ray, and I don't have any daily pain at all from doing these sorts of things.
Well, that's an excellent testimonial, and thank you for sharing those personal details about your background. I hope that clarifies for the audience, for all of you who are watching our little event here, some of the reasons why I have a great respect for KP as a teacher, somebody who has healed themselves of a serious illness and somebody who has received extensive classical training and somebody who has worked in the herb industry and somebody who is also an educator at a very high professional level. So thank you, KP, for the background stories here, the addition to your bio. And we should be jumping into our main presentation now. Before we get started, talking about these five major herbs from Ayurveda and the benefits that they have and how important they are and some of the complexities of using them, I just want to mention that at the end of our little discussion here that I'm going to be introducing KP's new course, which is going to be coming out, which is Ayurvedic Herbalism, Ancient Remedies for Reducing Inflammation, Improving Mental Clarity, and Aging Vibrantly. So now, KP, let's talk about these five herbs, these five very important herbs here. And since you have so much information to share, since I have participated in many of your classes in the past, I know that once you get going, that you are a veritable encyclopedic source of information, even about just one herb. And we have five herbs to cover. But let me just ask you, why do you think these five herbs are so important for everybody? Why did you pick these five herbs for this talk?
Well, honestly, it's a little bit like asking a person what their favorite pie is or something like that. But to choose five out of the 500 or 5,000 that are available is challenging. But these are things that almost everybody can take. They're not going to hurt anybody. Most people have the kinds of problems that these herbs would benefit. They're relatively easy to use, essentially no side effects. They taste pretty decent if you're going to use them. That's always a concern for people. And they're easily available from health food stores or online today. So it gave us a good handful of things to dig into and really sink our teeth into. Oh, the other thing is that they work really well. So the people should be able to experience good results from them quickly.
Excellent. Okay, if you have just joined us, we are talking with KP Khalsa, and the topic of our discussion is the five essential Ayurvedic remedies for healing and living disease-free. And so, KP, I'm just going to turn it back to you, and let's go ahead and start with the first herb that you would like to talk about, the first major Ayurvedic herb, which would be what and why and how?
Sure. Let's talk first about ashwagandha. This ashwagandha was the herb of the year this year in the health food industry. I don't know if they name an herb of the year every year, but I guess they must because it was all over the news. Ashwagandha is one of those 50-year overnight sensations. Very, very basic in Ayurveda, one of the most widely used and widely effective herbal remedies. The name ashwagandha literally means smells like a horse. And the implication is smells like horse urine. You see that in translations. Never smelled like horse urine to me. And in fact, I grew up on a farm. I know what horses and horse urine smells like. So don't be put off by that. A better explanation might be something like gives you the strength of a horse. This is a long-term, slow-acting, stamina-enhancing tonic for men and women. It's used mainly by men. So this is the one herb, if men had to pick an herb to take forever, that would be the best for men across the board. Now, that doesn't eliminate its use for women. And in fact, we'll talk about it being used for women when we talk more about that. But it enhances your ability to have good solid energy during the day and then your ability to have good sleep at night. It doesn't make you sleepy when you take it. It helps restore proper sleep rhythms so you're sleepy at bedtime and you can have a good solid sleep and awake and feeling refreshed. This herb that gives you the stamina of a horse is one of the main sexual remedies in Ayurveda. And even though, again, it's mainly talked about for men in that regard, for women it's also effective. So it enhances, albeit slowly, the sexual functions of either gender, libido, sexual performance, erectile capacity, orgasmic capacity, just everything you want to know about sexual functioning. The beauty of ashwagandha is in the fact that it acts slowly. So you do have to give it some time to work, and you're talking a few weeks for it to really kick in and maybe a few months for it to maximize. One of the main uses that we use ashwagandha for is anxiety. And for that, it can work a little faster. Again, you're talking maybe 2 weeks, slowly but surely. many, many women have told me that they traded their Valium straight across for ashwagandha. Again, Valium works in 15 minutes, but it doesn't cure your anxiety. Ashwagandha works in 15 days, but it has a much more long-term health balancing effect for anxiety. So immune enhancement, longevity, sexual functioning, stamina during the day, better sleep at night. It's just so beneficial for so many things. Ashwagandha is the root of a plant closely related to tomatoes. In fact, it even has little red fruits that look like tomato. The English name is winter cherry because these little red fruits that look like a tomato but are the size of a cherry come out later in the season. So it's a tomato plant, basically, and the root then is very food-like. People can use very high doses. In fact, you could probably start with something like a gram a day, and just about anybody can take it, and probably you'll begin to feel some changes. That would be a typical long-term dose. So the average child at puberty would begin to take ashwagandha, typically boys, about a gram a day, and you just take that gram every day the rest of your life. Most herbs in Ayurveda are recommended as powders, and often they're blended into formulas. And those formulas then are just mixed into something mushy, like a little warm milk or a little honey. You take that off a spoon and swallow it, and that's as complicated as it ever gets. Ashwagandha, as herbs go, tastes pretty good. Now, you don't need to email me and tell me that you tried some and it was the worst thing you've ever tasted, because I've definitely heard that, but it's all relative. From my perspective, ashwagandha is pretty decent tasting. So to treat anxiety, a typical dose is much more like about 15 grams. So let's say you take 15 grams, that would be about 2 tablespoons of the powder, mix it into something, slug it down, and do that every day for a couple weeks, and you'll begin to notice some changes. I'm reminded of a story of a friend of mine who runs an herb store, and a woman came in for a consultation, and then as she was leaving, she said, you know, my husband just isn't getting the job done in the bedroom, but he would never come to a place like this. So can I do his consultation for him? And my colleague said, well, you know, it's not really ethical for me to sort of talk about him to you, but I think ashwagandha couldn't hurt anybody. So, you know, why don't you try that? And then she forgot all about that encounter. 3 weeks later, a box of long-stemmed red roses shows up at her store with no card or anything. And then the phone rang later and said, did you get my flowers? She said, well, I was that woman that you talked to 3 weeks ago and talked about my husband. So that's how rapidly it can work. It's just really one of the fundamental herbs of Ayurveda. We're going to talk about 3 herbs today that are intended to be taken every day forever. So ashwagandha is the one for men. Again, not an issue for women to take it. And my clientele has been 95% women for the entire 47 years that I've been doing this. So I've given ashwagandha to far more women than men, largely for anxiety. We can talk about that a little bit more later. In any case, Americans are beginning to tune into ashwagandha, as evidenced by the fact that it's the herb of the year last year. A lot of great scientific research on this herb, a lot of traditional use, and then a lot of just casual folk use in America is really putting it on the map. David, do you want to talk about any of these herbs individually as we're talking, or shall I just forge ahead?
Well, I think we could do both. I think that you should just continue on. But one thing that you might want to add here is any potential contraindications that you might pass on to people, because I know that every one of the herbs that you have listed are very safe. They're very applicable for a general audience. We are talking to a great diversity of different kinds of people. Many people are on medications, they have serious health challenges, and so I just make it a practice whenever I am mentioning herbs to always include any type of potential contraindication that might be important to consider. So as you're going along, that would just be something that I would vote for, but otherwise it's up to you.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let's go back and talk a little bit about general rules for applying all these things. I'm a great fan of incremental dose increase. In other words, when you read a dose in a book, start at 1/10 or 1/20 of the dose that you think might be appropriate for you and take a few days to work up. Usually 4 or 5 days is adequate, but that gives your body a chance to get used to something new. It reduces the likelihood of complications tremendously, and it gives your body the opportunity to give you a signal if anything is happening. the usual side effects for just about any of these herbs, if there are any, and as David said, they're quite rare, would be a little nausea or loose stool, maybe a little bit of headache. And if you notice that and you begin to increase the dose and those things increase, then bring the dose back down to the dose that doesn't cause those problems. So incremental dose increase, use the dose that is does not produce side effects. Ashwagandha is unlikely to produce any side effects other than that in particular, but we always are concerned about that. Now, the problem with interactions is that there are hundreds of drugs and thousands of herbs, and so it's impossible for anyone to know what all the interactions would be, and very few have even been tested. So there's no real obvious interactions with the things that we're talking about here today. But again, just watch out for that. I would encourage you to discuss this with your medical doctor, with the prescriber of the drugs that you you're taking, and find out if they give you some education about how to use them together if you choose to do that. All right, well, let's move on to the second herb here, which is shatavari. Shatavari is the woman's equivalent to the ashwagandha. The name shatavari means 100 husbands, and I think you get the indication. Again, it's a sexual tonic. Again, not limited to women by any means. We use it in men as well, but it is the main stamina-enhancing, immune-enhancing, hormone-balancing tonic for women. So whereas ashwagandha is a little bit warming and a little bit drying, shatavari, the one we're talking about now, is a little bit cooling and a little bit moistening. So they offset each other's characteristics, their physiological actions, and they're often used together in equal proportions. That's a very common way to administer these in Ayurveda, equal proportions of those two. And we see that in classical Ayurvedic formulas all the time, that they're together in equal proportions, partly to pull in both genders, but also just to offset the energetics. So shatavari is a hormone balancing tonic for women that enhances sexuality and reproduction in general. So all the things we said about ashwagandha are potential for shatavari in terms of sexuality, but it also has an affinity for the woman's reproductive tract and helps to, in a very slow way, nourish, balance, and stabilize reproductive function. So that would balance menstrual periods, have some benefit for PMS, menstrual cramps, things like that. But it also has an affinity for the urinary system. So we use it to soothe and cool inflammation and heat in the urinary system, bladder infection, that sort of thing. It's a major herb for bladder infection. So many of these herbs have so many uses. They all have physical, mental, and spiritual uses, and Ayurveda focuses on that entire spectrum of possibilities. So shatavari is used for, it enhances lactation, for example. We just had a student who, his wife just had a baby and was having difficulty producing enough milk, and we just coincidentally talked about lactation and shatavari in class that day. He picked some home, picked some up on the way home at night, and she took some, and he came back the next day and said, "Hey, milk all over the place." So very, very valuable for many, many, many things. Again, shatavari is a food-like herb. It's the root of an asparagus plant, so quite edible. These are cousins of the ones that we eat, whereas ashwagandha is the cousin of the edible tomato, shatavari is the cousin of the edible asparagus. So shatavari root, when it's fresh, is just delicious. You're only going to find it in Asia, probably, but if you have the chance to munch into some when it's fresh, it tastes kind of like, it's hard to describe, but maybe something like a jicama. It's moist and slightly sweet and a little crunchy. So it's got a fair, paper-thin brown skin. You peel it off, take a bite, delicious. But even dried, you can stir it into warm milk or put it into your beans and rice or, you know, whatever, however you want to get it in. It's relatively tasteless, you know, as these things go. And again, a gram a day starting at puberty. I was just talking to one of our advanced students who is an expat Indian woman, and she said, oh, in the village that she grew up, it would be unthinkable for a pubescent girl to not start taking shatavari. It's when she has her first period, there's a big announcement about it, and then grandma brings in a jar of shatavari and says, okay, this is gonna be your friend for the rest of your life, a gram a day for the next, you know, 80 years. So some of these things we use in higher doses to treat particular symptoms, like the things we were talking about. Shatavari is fantastic for hot flashes. We'll dive into that more as we talk in the future, but it just will shut off hot flashes overnight often. Fantastic. So a woman can be having 15 hot flashes a day. She takes shatavari today, no hot flashes tomorrow. that doesn't cure the hot flashes. She has to keep taking it, and eventually then we'll dig back into what caused it and stop the hot flashes for good. But to temporarily suppress them, Shatavari is excellent. So some of these symptomatic uses, like we talked about with the ashwagandha, you're talking more like 15 grams. That would be a pretty good dose for hot flashes or PMS issues with Shatavari. Otherwise, maintenance, a gram a day, and pretty much no women would be concerned about using it at that kind of a dose over time. Shatavari is unlikely to cause anything in the way of side effects at those kinds of doses. It might cause a little extra urination. It might cause, again, a little bit. It loosens the stool a little bit anyway, maybe. So that might be a concern. All right, so those are the number one and number two herbs for men and women, and no problem taking them together for either gender if you choose to do so. Let's talk now about the number one herbal formula in the world, the one taken by the most people on planet Earth, Triphala. The name means three fruits. Tri is three, phal is fruit. These are little wrinkly, fig-like fruits that grow in the foothills of the Himalayas. They're not fruits that would be delicious like a pear for dessert. They're botanically fruit, something more like a fig. They do not taste good. These, I can guarantee you, do not taste good. They're mixed together in equal parts. You take out the pit, dry the fruit, grind them up, equal parts. And the reason they're used together is because this three-herb combination is ultimately balancing for pretty much every type of physiology that there is. As we dig into Ayurveda more, we'll talk about the fact that we treat by individual physiology. And so everybody gets an individualized herb recommendation, but this is the one that can be taken by anybody, anytime, because it's beneficial for people that have a dense mucousy kind of constitution or energy balance, people that have a hot pro-inflammatory kind of energy balance, and people that have a dry, unstable kind of energy balance. It balances all of them. Triphala is known in folk medicine as a mild laxative, and people often use it for that purpose. You take, let's say, a gram at bedtime, and you work your way up, increasing by a gram at night. What we'd like to do is to have you awaken with the urge for a bowel movement. So we can use Triphala to do that, and then you adjust the time and the amount, and you get up to 5 grams or so somewhere around bedtime, and you have that very comfortable, physiologically appropriate bowel movement in the morning. Otherwise, it treats every gland, liver, skin, eyes, hormone balance, endocrine system, but it's mild and slow. So we use this one over a lifetime. Again, it's in probably 95% of Ayurvedic classical formulas as a sub-formula. So there'll be an herb formula with 10 ingredients, and one of the ingredients will be this combination because it helps the entire formula be more appropriate. So you've got a billion people a day taking Triphala in South Asia. That's, you know, India and then the other countries around it, Burma, Nepal, that area. So an awful lot of people. Everybody knows about it. It's in every grandma's herb cabinet in India. The typical dose here for maintenance is, again, only about a gram. So this is taken by either gender, and those would be the big three in Ayurveda, that everybody would take a gram or so of Triphala, just for very general long-term balance. And a man would take a gram of ashwagandha, and a woman would take a gram of Shatavari. Triphala contains three very unusual fruits. These are strange trees. They're unusual botanically. They have weird phytochemicals that don't occur in other kinds of plants. So this strange energetic mixture of these things when mixed together gives us this combination that's universally useful. One of the fruits in Triphala is amla. And amla is about the size, smaller than a lemon, size of a golf ball. They're kind of a translucent green, and they look like they should be delicious, but they aren't. They taste horrible. But that herb is one of the most outstanding antioxidants in the world. In tests of hundreds of antioxidants done by scientists, it always shows up in the top five. So we know that oxidation causing heat, inflammation, damage to tissues is the big thing in medical news these days about why people get sick and stay sick. And this has one of the world's best antioxidants that you just take a consistent amount every day. So Triphala, normally taken as powder, it's easily available in capsules or tablets if you want to try that. All right, well, moving on to the fourth of five here that we want to talk about is one of my favorite herbs, Gotu Kola. And this herb, I use it really a lot. My specialty is neurology, and this is an herb for the nerves, so I'm inclined to use it frequently. But this herb really delivers. It's a cognitive activator, a brain-enhancing remedy that increases sensory awareness, sensory processing, memory. It treats cognitive decline, just healing of brain injuries, so many things. The nerve tissues themselves, crushing injury to the nerves. It's my secret weapon for multiple sclerosis, just fantastic for that situation. But we're using Gotocola to treat very serious neurological issues, things that 10 years ago we would have said, we're not so sure if we can handle them. Now, very confidently, we know that we can use these herbs to treat those. Now, Gotocola is a different story dose-wise compared to the other ones we talked about. This is an herb that you could take every day forever. And in fact, you know, maybe if you're recovering from a brain injury, it'd be a good idea to take some, a beverage strength cup every day for the rest of your life. But this is really a much more short-term remedy to treat a particular condition. So you're in an auto accident, you have a crushing injury to the nerve. In this case, you use a high dose. So high dose of Gotocola might be 30 grams. You can use it as powder, but that's a lot of powder. So tea works very, very well. Doesn't taste too bad, and that's in the eye of the beholder, but, you know, kind of like lawn grass, not too bad. You cook it up, you drink that tea, and we begin to see changes in the nerve system, healing, cognition, memory, all those things very, very quickly. Gotocola is in the parsley family. It's a flimsy little salad vegetable, much like spinach. In fact, if you know how to use spinach in cooking, you now know how to use Gotocola. We often use Gotocola in lab classes and cook it into other things like pureed vegetables, and it just kind of disappears and people really enjoy it in there. We made pesto out of it the other day in class and everybody loved that. So a flimsy salad vegetable, much like spinach, although again it is in the parsley family, related to carrots and fennel and things like that. So Gotocola, stupendous herb for the nervous system. The Sanskrit name for Gotocola is Brahmi, which means godlike. In other words, it gives you the cognitive ability to be God or to see God or to think like God, to have a divine mind. Really nice. Well, the last herb here is the herb that I'm most known for, turmeric. And of course, turmeric is now the most researched substance in all of science. More scientific papers have been written on turmeric than any other subject in the history of scientific research. Pretty amazing. And that's all within the last 5 years. Now, those papers were almost all written on curcumin, which is just one phytochemical in turmeric, the main anti-inflammatory phytochemical. But not only is it anti-inflammatory, it has hundreds of other uses that have been validated scientifically. Turmeric was one of the first herbs that I learned about from my teacher, and of course, you know, nobody knew anything about it then, except it was, it made curry powder yellow, and who had even had curry powder, you know, in those days. But it's one of the most consumed herbs in the Indian kitchen. It's in every kitchen, every grandma uses it, it's in almost every dish, and it is that thing that makes things yellow. The benefit is that it's dramatically detoxifying, turmeric across the board, dramatically detoxifying. It's antimicrobial. It helps to heal joints, heal structural tissue, connective tissue, like skin rashes, things like that. And then, of course, the anti-inflammatory benefit that we've all been hearing about. One of the things that makes turmeric beneficial is that it's taken in India so consistently over a lifetime. The average Indian person eats 1 to 2 grams of turmeric every single day their entire life, just in their food. And it turns out that turmeric, we now know, is quite psychoactive. We've seen a number of great studies here recently that showed that turmeric was effective, or curcumin specifically, for depression. It turns out that India is number 108 in incidence of dementia in the world. One of in the ranking of countries that keep those statistics, India is one of the lowest. We're number 3. For dementia in the United States. The top 5 are all industrialized Western type countries. They're all Northern European countries, except Iceland and Norway, countries like that, except for the United States. We're number 3 and India number 108. So our rate of dementia, Alzheimer's specifically, in the United States is 8 times that of India. The overall rate of many cancers in India is 25 times less than the United States. Not 25%, 25 times. We're talking prostate cancer and bowel cancer and numerous other cancer. So a lot of this is filtering back to turmeric. I'm sure there are many things that are done in India. You can't think of a place much different than most of the United States, climate-wise, diet-wise, you know, ethnicity, just everything you could imagine, lifestyle. Still, a lot of this looks to be coming back to turmeric. So we can really dig into turmeric and talk a lot about its properties, but we can talk for hours because of the great things that it does for immune function and brain reduction of inflammation in the brain, as we said. All kind of goes back to inflammation, as it turns out, and it's tasty. All right, so there's your top five, and a good chance to dig into those even more when we talk later.
Excellent. Thank you. As always, it's very educational to listen to your presentations. Your presentations are very concise, and they're also very practical and intriguing. Now, I would like to go back to one thing here, which I'm sure has crossed the minds of several of our listeners, and that is, could you translate 1 gram into an approximate teaspoon dose? Because I don't think people are thinking in terms of gram weights when they're thinking in terms of taking their herbs in their kitchen.
Yeah, sure. For most herbs that are kind of medium weight and ground into powder, a gram would be about half a teaspoon. They vary a lot in their fluffiness and their density, so professionals always use weight, but I understand in the kitchen you're going to want to know that. So when we talk about these more in another context, we'll narrow that down, and I'm familiar enough with most of these to know what a gram looks like or 15 grams looks like or whatever, so half a teaspoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's excellent, and I'm sure that'll be very helpful because I know that people are going to be very interested in starting some of these things right away. Now, before we talk about the details of your upcoming course, where you will be elaborating on all these things in quite a bit more detail, I'd just like to go back and reframe these 5 herbs in one specific clinical application, because I know that one of the main topics that people are interested in and one of the major challenges that people are having is inflammation, and you have touched on that with a couple of these herbs. But I'm wondering if you could go back and reframe all of these herbs in the context of treating inflammation. In other words, which of these do you think are going to be the most powerful? Which is number one? Number two, do shatavari and ashwagandha have anti-inflammatory benefits and so on? If you could just touch on these herbs once more in light of the inflammation issue.
Well, absolutely. Of the four, all of them except ashwagandha, so that would be triphala, shatavari, gotukola, and turmeric, are noted anti-inflammatories in their own right, and a lot of good science on that to boot. Ashwagandha does have some kind of minor anti-inflammatory properties, but that's not its main claim to fame. If I were to rate the other four, I would say that turmeric clearly is the number one for inflammation, and again, 10,000 scientific studies support that. I would put gotukola next. Gotukola is what we would call in herbalism a cooling herb. It suppresses metabolism, reduces heart rate, reduces the circulation of blood throughout the body. All of those aspects of your homeostasis that run your body, and they need to be kind of in the middle of the bell curve, not too fast, not too slow. Gotukola tends to kind of slow those things down. So it would be of benefit to your body not overburning calories to create heat, which ends up as inflammation. It's a cooling herb. I would put shatavari next. Again, it's well known as a cooling herb, that same kind of situation. So when people are inflamed, the inflammation comes, you know, from the Ayurvedic perspective, by having things running too fast, too hot. Your body's secreting too much hot digestive aids, your heart is pumping too fast, your blood pressure is up, and we want those things to go back to that, what we call the zone of dynamic balance, the middle where everything is just right, the baby bear kind of category, where you have a little wiggle room, but we want things to be right in the middle, not too hot, not too cold, not too fast, not too slow. So shatavari cools things down a little bit. So we wouldn't give shatavari to a person who was exceptionally cold and slow and had insufficient cold digestion, for example. So those are inflammatory kinds of issues. And then Triphala, again, one of the fruits is the world's best antioxidant. As we know, inflammation is largely concerned with oxidation in our body. So we've all heard about antioxidants and those fruit pigments like blueberries and things like that. So not surprising that, again, it's fruits. These fruits then are all anti-inflammatory to a certain extent, but the amla in particular. Later, when we talk about these things in greater detail, we'll talk about the amla and its profound anti-inflammatory qualities. And there we use it as a single herb in much higher doses. The reason we use the triphala is just because it is balanced enough that can be taken by anybody and everybody.
Nice. Thank you. So we're talking with KP Khalsa about five of the most important herbs in Ayurveda. And as you can tell, he has a wealth of knowledge, and this is a very short period of time. And so we are offering a new course. And I'll just go ahead and jump into the description of this course here, which I think you're going to find very interesting. And then we'll take some time back with KP to talk about the details of the modules. And I think you'll get a really good overview of what he has to offer here. So the new course is Ayurvedic Herbalism, Ancient Remedies for Reducing Inflammation and Improving Mental Clarity and Aging Vibrantly. So this is a very powerful course. It's going to be very practical. That will be giving a lot of these remedies that have been used in places such as India for a very long time. And as KP has described, these are not things that are thought of as just a retail, over-the-counter type of thing that you take occasionally. These are many times things that you can incorporate into your diet for extended use. Now, if you'd like to follow along as we're talking about this course, you can find the page at ayurvedicherbalism.com. I'll mention that several times to give you a chance to find it and join us. ayurvedicherbalism.com, pretty straightforward. So you can just put that in your browser and follow us on that page. And if you are joining us later as a recording, you can just go to the email for the link there. And if you're not at the computer, don't worry. We're going to cover it all anyway. And so I'll just give everybody a minute here to get to that page. And as we are slowly arriving there, you'll see at the top what you'll discover in these 7 weeks. That's the title there that you'll see when you get to the page, ayurvedicherbalism.com. So let's go through the description of the course. But before we actually start talking about the modules, KP, I'd like to find out what your intention was in putting together this course. What do you think will be the most important thing that students will get from taking this 7-week program on Ayurvedic herbalism?
Well, David, I'm out there working with real people in the real world every day, and I work with people from every walk of life, every age, every kind of level of health, from and also beginning students all the way up to professionals. And the one thing that I see is that people are hurting and confused. They have some kind of sense that natural medicine is of benefit in some way, but they don't know how to apply it. We know from news reporting that people's approval rating for natural healing is going up. It's way, way up this year, and yet they're just bamboozled about what to do. They watch TV shows, and they disagree with each other, and they just get an avalanche of information. People's health is declining, and they just don't know what to do about it, and they have a sense something could be done, but they don't know what that is. They're stressed, anxious, fatigued, mildly miserable, and they don't really know that that's not how they need to feel and that they could feel different. There are outstanding resources available, and we're going to talk about those things. Ayurvedic herbs give you the potential to be healthy and to stay healthy. That's the bottom line. Ayurveda is oriented toward first bringing you back to being healthy, which most people haven't experienced. They've experienced being out of balance and sort of mildly unhealthy their entire lives. So that feels great to get back to that. And then how do you sustain that so that you don't have those miseries of elderhood fatigue, dryness, constipation, difficulty sleeping, cognitive decline, immune dysfunction. We go on and on. So you get healthy and stay healthy. People have this sense that there's something more and that the natural medicine would be good for them. And they're right. That's what we're going to provide is herbal instruction that helps people understand that herbs are dramatic, dynamic, and effective. If you learn how to use them, they will work very reliably and consistently for you to help you with your day-to-day problems. We'll talk about some things that will help people treat conditions that they experience today, a headache or a muscle ache or constipation, whatever it is, and then also long-term things that help people stay healthy over many decades and have a very healthy elderhood, a long life and a healthy life. That's where we're going.
Excellent. Now, I know that there are a lot of people attending this event. I think we had well over 15 or 20,000 people sign up for this. And that means that there's a great diversity of people of different ages all over the world, all kinds of health conditions. And I know that there's also a diversity of background levels in terms of their medical experience and training. And that we're going to have people who have never heard of Trifla before, and we're going to have people who are clinicians who are listening into this talk. So it would be helpful for everybody if you could tell us, who is this course for? Is there a particular level that you are targeting, or is this a general inclusive course that's going to be good for everybody or somewhere in between?
Well, I'll just say right straight out that there's going to be something for everybody. My mission over the past 47 years, hard to believe I'm saying that number, it's almost 50 years now, but when I first started with my teacher, who was very Asian and did things in a very typical kind of Asian way, where it took a long time to get a little piece here and a little piece there and put it together, which was on purpose. That's how Asian teachers teach. My mission has been to take that information and make it palatable to the modern mind ever since that time. So that's been my goal, is to put it together in a way that is, as you said earlier, practical, useful. You can get the information, you can get the products, you can figure it out. So we'll include things for that wide range of people. People have never heard of these things before, all the way up to clinicians. There should be some great clinical gems for people who are used to using these things every day. Because of my diverse background, people often tell me that I talk about Ayurvedic herbs and talk about uses for them that they'd never heard of before. And it's just because I've been wading in these waters for a long time, and I just get a chance to bump into these things and then use them and figure out how they work. Another thing is that we'll de-emphasize Sanskrit. Some of these things, you know, Trifla, Ashwagandha, those are Sanskrit words, but we're not going to use a bunch of exotic foreign vocabulary. We're going to talk about things that you resonate with in English, and you'll leave the class with things that you can use tomorrow. That's always my goal, is that you could walk out, click your computer, order from Amazon Prime, and 2 days later, you're taking that herb, and you'll have enough knowledge to be able to do it and get the benefit from it, whatever your experience with Ayurveda.
Great. Modern application, very accessible for everybody. So the course is starting on June 6th, and it's going to be every Wednesday at noon Pacific time. Now, KP, let's go ahead and look at the course page and discuss the modules here. So if you could tell us just a few major points about the 7 modules. We have a 7-week course here. I will mention that this is a live streaming video class that's going to be happening along with the Q&A session afterwards. I'll give you all the details afterwards about what you'll be getting with this course. But let's find out from KP first, what are the modules going to be teaching us?
Yeah, so module 1 is an introduction to Ayurvedic herbalism. We need to talk a little bit about the worldview of Ayurveda, a little bit about the vocabulary, how Ayurveda uses these herbs. It's different than people are used to thinking about. So our American way of thinking about medicine is find a bug, use a drug. Find an ill, use a pill. It's not that simple in Ayurveda. It's simple and elegant, but not simple in that way. So we're going to look at individualized body energies, some of which we just talked about a little bit. Is your metabolism running too fast or too slow? Are you too wet or too dry? And once we bring those things into balance, it's more like being a gardener than a mechanic. So we're going to slowly assist the body over time into nudging it into that zone of dynamic balance. Now, that's not to say that we can't treat particular symptoms. I mean, if we want to treat a headache, we can do that. But you're not, you don't have that headache because of turmeric deficiency. You have that headache because of metabolic issues going on in your body. So we'll dive into that. In each of these modules, we'll talk about some daily fundamentals, things that you can begin to incorporate into your life and do every day. Things like applying certain herbal oils topically. One of the things we'll talk about is oil pulling, which has become very popular, rinsing the inside of your mouth with oil to clean your to clean out the inside of your mouth. We'll come up with something every single module that you can do as a daily fundamental to be able to sleep better, get up refreshed, adjust your diet, things like that. So introduction to Ayurvedic herbalism, just to set the stage for the next things that we're going to be discussing. Module two is detox and digestion. Ayurveda is all over the digestion. It's the core issue in Ayurveda. If things are digesting well, then pretty much you can assume everything else is going to go well, and the opposite is true. So we want to dig into that. Detox is certainly something that people are very concerned about now, and we'll talk about how to do that safely and appropriately. The whole modern idea of detox, the way we think about it today in modern naturopathy and in all the things people are talking about on the internet, came from Asian healing systems, from Ayurveda, the importance of cleaning out the old before you reestablish the new. So we'll dive into that. We'll talk about some herbs. We're going to talk about several herbs each session, and we're going to limit the number of herbs that we talk about so that we can dig deeply into those things, and you'll leave the class really knowing how to be able to use those, where to get them, what the dose is, what to expect, and in this case, to sharpen up your digestion and help to detox your tissues. The next two modules are both about inflammation. It's become so obvious that inflammation is incredibly critical to control. We now know that it's the source of almost every degenerative disease in that people experience, from heart disease to digestive issues, skin disease, and even dementia. So we'll talk about those herbs and lifestyle habits, food choices for those inflammatory things. Interesting that Ayurveda talked about that actually about 3,000 years ago. Inflammation, they didn't use that word, but they described the process was so important that one of the ancient sages wanted all of Ayurveda to revolve around that. They recognized how incredibly important that was at the time. And we have a pro-inflammatory culture. Our lifestyle, our environment, our diet, the things we do every day, our emotional state, it all pumps up inflammation. So almost every American has this chronic subclinical inflammation that's slowly burning out our tissues. Not the inflammation you get when you play softball and twist your elbow, but the inflammation that, like when you leave the pilot light on in the oven for 50 years and it slowly cooks the oven to death. That's what's happening to your body. We want to assess that and stop it. The next module is mental clarity and focus. Who couldn't use that? So we'll talk about some herbs, including the herb Gota Kola we just discussed, for enhancing your memory, helping you get your marbles back, and then not lose them again, your ability to remember names, faces, project details, those kinds of things. So we'll dive into that. Then anti-aging and treating menopause, which of course is a normal part of aging. I want to spend some serious time talking about menopause because I think we'll probably have a lot of women in the course. I think a lot of women of menopausal age and maybe postmenopausal who are already experiencing the rigors of that change in their life. So we'll talk about how to stay healthy over an extended period of time, not just live longer, but live in a healthy way. We don't want to be like, certainly like my parents were in their later elderhood, just waiting for one day to go by so that they could wake up and have the next day be worse. What a torture. So we don't want that. We want to be vital and vibrant for an extended life that's healthy and we're strong and have good stamina and good energy. And then, of course, the menopause issues. All right, then we'll finish up with healthy skin and hair, something that most people are interested in. I think we all would agree that Indian women are known the year or the world over for their beautiful hair. Talk about some things to do that, to take internally, and maybe a few things to apply externally to support long-term skin health, treat some temporary skin issues, and then enhance your beauty, inner and outer. Seven modules.
Nice, thank you. Very extensive amount of information, and a short amount of time. Now let's go ahead and talk about how this is going to work. As I mentioned before, the course is starting on June 6th, and it's going to be happening every Wednesday at noon. That's Pacific time. So there's quite a few things that you are going to receive when you sign up for this course. First, you're going to get 7 90-minute sessions with KP, and that includes live interactive calls plus question and answer time, and it's also streaming video format. And for those of you who don't have streaming video format available, you will also receive the audio recordings. And with this course, you are also going to be getting weekly exercises and practices to deepen your understanding of Ayurvedic medicine. There is also a robust online learning community throughout each week where you can interact with other course participants. You will also have unlimited access to the recordings of all the class sessions, and that means that you can listen online or you can download them later. And you will also receive PDF transcripts for each class session. So that's a lot of different ways to receive the information, not just while it's happening, but afterwards, at any time, actually, any time for years later. So there's also a number of bonuses. And in this case, in KP's course, an extensive list of bonuses also. We can talk with KP more about what these are. So number one bonus, essential of Ayurvedic herbs. And this is a set of three webinars. One webinar is titled Ayurvedic Herbs. Another is titled The Secrets of Gugul. And the third is titled 10 Little Known Ayurvedic Herbs. So you're going to be getting a lot more than just seven modules, actually. And then we also have another special bonus that I am familiar with, which is a talk titled Fibromyalgia, Causes, Symptoms, and Remedies. And this was an audio dialogue that KP and I had on one of the recent plant medicine summits. So we also have a bonus for those of you who are already interested and inspired and enthusiastic about doing this particular program. And that is, if you sign up right now, or before midnight today, actually, you'll also receive another bonus, which is the Introduction to Ayurvedic Herbs, another collection of webinars. In this case, two webinars with PDF handouts from KP. One is titled Traditional Ayurvedic Formulas, and another is the Ayurvedic Essentials. So, KP, would you like to mention anything about any of these bonuses, or is it self-explanatory?
Well, briefly, each of them is a 90-minute webinar, pre-recorded with slides, so you'll be able to see the pictures. It'll all be on the screen. You can stop the video anytime, take notes, and we'll dive into even more detail than we do in the regular seven modules. And so that's bumping up your module count from 7 to 12. Each of these recordings is as long as the modules in the main course itself. A lot of information. You can go right out and use it tomorrow.
Okay. Well, KP, it's been really enjoyable and educational as always. I want to mention again, one last time, where people can find the course. It's at AyurvedicHerbalism.com, AyurvedicHerbalism.com. And in closing here, KP, I'll just ask if you have any final thoughts or comments that you'd like to share with people about your upcoming course.
Really excited that we're doing this. I love working with the Shift Network. I've been a guest on David's Plant Summit a few times. They're great to work with. I think you'll really like that opportunity. And this course is just going to be packed with information, not only the seven modules of the regular course, but five more 90-minute modules, plus the exercises and things that we talked about. So I think you're getting a great bargain, a lot of great information, and I'd encourage you to join us and then go out and use it right away.
Nice. So, KP, I just want to thank you personally, not just for doing this wonderful event with such great information, but also for all the work that you've been doing for decades, really. amount of work that you have put in, years and years of study and research and dedication to keep the field of herbal medicine flourishing and actually to revive it in a certain way. I mean, if we think back to even just a few years ago, this level of herbal education was not happening. This level of herbal knowledge and access to these herbs was not happening. So I see you as one of the primary people, a top herbalist in the field who has contributed a tremendous amount to our society in terms of restoring, reviving, translating classical Asian medicine into our modern society. So thank you for all of that work for so many years.
Well, back at you, David. Thanks so much for your kind words. And I know that you have a very similar history and a similar mission. So we've locked arms. We're in it together. And let's hope we can serve humanity for many years to come.
And for everybody who has been on this video recording, joining us on this call and this event, thank you very much for taking the time. I hope that you found it educational and beneficial. I hope you were inspired to take the course. I will be taking the course, and so hope to see you there. Thank you.